And he's one of the best. Lauren Coleman, cryptozoologist. We'll be back with him. We will take your phone calls now this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Lauren, if you had one creature that you could find, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, maybe the Thunderbirds, one creature, which one would it be? Which one would you like to find?
Well, I would very much like to find the Abominable Snowman, the Yeti. I think that since that's the creature that got me involved in 1960, it's always going to be my favorite, and I really think that there's very good evidence for the Yeti, and it's just a matter of time. And it's always interesting to me that a Yeti is always in the background and doesn't get as much attention as Bigfoot nowadays. But I think that there's evidence there, and there's going to be some bigger expeditions, especially after some major motion pictures come out in the next 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Solid ones, no comedies. I mean, a real good movie.
Yeah, you know, Serkine, the guy that did the Superman movies.
Yes.
He's in production and development of the remake of The Abominable Snowman of the Himalayas. That classic from the 1957, and from everything I'm hearing, that and a couple other movies that I know about that I can't talk about on the Yeti are being developed. And
as long as they take a serious look at it.
Oh, yeah, definitely serious. I think that there was a rumor a few years ago that Nicolas Cage was going to do a funny movie on the Abominable Snowman, and one of the reasons that I think it was deep-sixed is that it's really not a good time for comedies about the Abominable Snowman. And yet, it's almost time for the blood and gore ones, but something a little bit more serious in between. Almost like the approach that The Aviator had for Howard Hughes.
Sure.
Something like that.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on with Lauren Coleman. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Lauren.
Hi there.
I've had quite an experience when I lived in Hawaii, and it was on Kamehameha Highway between Kaneohe and Ka'ava. I was driving down the highway, which is on the windward side of the island where all the trees and green are, you know, like where the rainforests are. And I came to this bridge with a stream running through it. And all of a sudden, up from the ravine part of the stream and across the highway ran a group, and I mean a group of at least 20 of these menahonies that you were talking about. And I was so startled, I jammed on my brakes, but not quite in time, because my front end of my little Mazda truck went thump, and I hit one of them. And I was shocked, because all of these little menahunis in the group came over to where this little creature was in front of my truck, kind of picked them up, and ran across the road with them, and then down into the ravine again. And I thought the strangest thing about it was that they had three different color hair. They had black hair, they had red hair, and they had blonde hair. And they all had very, very tan complexions. They were about 3 feet tall maximum.
Yeah.
And I know they exist because I actually had a dent in my bumper, and I had a few little red hairs my bumper where it...
You still don't have the hairs, do you?
Oh, God, I wish I had saved them.
I wish she did.
Yeah.
Oh, but I swear I saw them, and I actually hit one of them.
Did you kill him?
I don't think so, because when the group picked him up, he was, like, kicking and flinging his arms all over the place. But I did nick him. And, and it did happen, and it happened on the island of Oahu on the windward side between Kaneohe and Ka'ava, and it was really quite a sight, really. I never was so surprised in my life, because I've always heard the legends of the Menehune, but I never thought I'd ever see any.
This is a strange story, Lauren.
That's very good. I mean, I would like this person to email me through my website.
Okay. Would you do that?
Oh, certainly.
That would be great. I'd like to talk to her. What's interesting about the Minnehuni is that the Hawaiians have taken the Minnehuni so seriously that in the 1800s they actually showed up in the census, that they had found villages of them and they were counting them. So it's only really in the 1900s that people started disputing whether or not they were real and, you know, treating them like they were elves and
they
fairies.
They weren't elves. They were
No. Your story is great. It sounds like a very real experience.
Will you give your email out again?
Go to laurencoleman.com. Go to the homepage there, and right at the bottom it says email Lauren Coleman. And you just click on that link, and then you can email me. That's the easiest way to do it.
LaurenColeman.com,
right.
COLE.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Coleman, like Coleman Stoves.
Okay, I appreciate that. That's an incredible story.
Yeah, I mean, and she told it so matter-of-factly. That was remarkable.
I would guess these three-foot creatures, could you call them human beings?
Yeah, they're like little human beings. They're definitely little people. But they're just like the Flores Island, hobbits. And all throughout the Pacific, on certain islands, you get these stories told very, very much as if they happened yesterday. I mean, I was able to, when I was on Hawaii, I interviewed a minister who had seen the Minnehuni run underneath a little hole underneath a tree near his church.
Okay, now I have a bizarre theory. Listen to this.
Okay.
You know, in the Bible, they talk about giants, and, you know, they say the giants spread with the women of man and things like that.
Yeah.
What if the originators of the Bible then were these little humans who are 3 feet, and we're the giants they were talking about?
Well, that's an interesting theory, George.
Yeah. It really is.
Never can tell.
You never can tell. It just dawned on me. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing fine. Sounds like you're driving somewhere.
Yes, I'm going back home, actually.
Where is home?
New Orleans.
All right. Go ahead, sir.
Well, when I was a little kid, I want to say about 10 years old, a friend of mine brought me to his uncle's house, who's right in the corner from me, who's a taxidermist. And he had a large black cat that he had stuffed for somebody. And being interested in zoology, which is why he brought me over there, I thought it would be a panther or something like that. But it was a cat that I'd never seen before. It was about the size, I would imagine, of a Labrador Retriever. It had a long tail, but it had ears sort of like a lynx cat does, with little tufts at the top. Does this sort of describe these black cats that people reported?
Yep. Did it have a long tail, you said?
Yes, yeah. He had a long tail.
And where did he say it was shot?
Well, it was shot on the side of Lake Pontchartrain by a hunter. It was stalking him. He was hunting deer, and it was stalking him, and he turned around, and it was not a fear. He shot it. And he brought it to the taxidermist, and apparently he gave it to the taxidermist.
Wow, I'd like to track that down.
Well, I'll see if I can visit him and see if I can take some pictures, and if I can, I'll email them to you.
That would be great, because there are not supposed to be any Black Panthers in Louisiana.
Well, none, that's not in captivity.
Right, exactly.
The other thing that I want to know is about these big birds, these thunderbirds. I recall seeing something on New Zealand that when people first migrated to New Zealand, didn't they have a large bird, an eagle of sort, that was killing the first migrants to New Zealand?
Well, they have the moa, which is the flightless bird. And then there's stories from across that area of a thing like the giant roc, R-O-C. And that may be what you were talking about. So, yes, there are legends from the Maori island, you know, the Maori people, of these giant birds, too.
Well, Jim, it's been a great show. George, you do a wonderful job.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. I'm still amazed. I think we're the giants, Lauren.
West. Yep, might have to write a book.
That's my next one. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
This is Jim in Grand Junction, Colorado.
Okay, Jim, go ahead, sir.
When I was, back a few years ago when my dad was still alive, he told me a story about the family. My grandfather and grandmother used to go to Marble, Colorado, you know, where the Unknown Soldiers Monument came from. Anyway, there was a marble quarry there, but there was wonderful fishing and a lot of wilderness. And my dad was fishing on a stream, and he was 10 years old. And it was starting to get dark, and he wanted to get back to the house there where my aunt and uncle, I mean my dad's aunt and uncle lived. And he said all of a sudden he saw something in a tree there, and there was kind of an opening through the forest there, and all of a sudden he heard a shh, and he said this giant bird just gliding right down at him and grabbed his hat, and he said he fought it off with his fishing pole, and he said it was huge. He said the body he knew was as tall as he was, and I guess when he got back to the house, why, his aunt and uncle told him that it was probably just a giant owl, but he didn't think so. He said it was just huge, and that's a true story.
Yep, they're all over, and this is in Colorado, right?
Yes, this was Marble, Colorado, and at that time, why, the only way to get there was through the Busk-Ivanhoe Tunnel, which they had just taken the tracks up from the Colorado Midland that had gone bankrupt, and so you could drive your touring cars and stuff through the tunnel, and then that was the way to get from the eastern slope to the western slope and down into the area there. It was very, very wilderness back then, anyway.
Yep. Well, it's that, you know, certainly in the Rockies, there's been different reports from the top of some of the mountains of these creatures being seen, and the Native Americans out there talking about the Thunderbirds were often talked about them bothering them.
Well, so, he was sure scared.
Yeah, sounds like it. Great story.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate you being part of the program. I still would love it if a real dinosaur were found, a Brontosaurus or something like that.
Yeah.
Possible?
Anything's possible, George, and I think that's why, you know, nobody expected a six-foot-long prehistoric fish from 65 million years ago to be discovered in, you know, in Indonesia in 1998, so that's been pretty interesting.
Are they trying to clone a mammoth? Have you heard that?
That certainly was happening during the 50s through the 70s. Now they're trying to clone the Tasmanian tiger, the thylacine. And I think that probably some Russian scientist someplace is interested in the mammoth. As long as you're finding the fur, hair, and the... actually, mammoth meat has been eaten by dogs, sled dogs. So they probably could try. Often what they find, though, is the DNA, because it's been frozen, isn't good enough to do cloning.
Lex is posted, by the way, on the coasttocoastam.com website, Hot Stories, the Ohio Big Cat photos. And I guess it's happening. It's happening a lot out there, Lauren.
Yeah, it is.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a question about Lauren's opinion on the Patterson footage and the book that came out that supposedly had all this evidence of it being a hoax and a man in a suit and all that.
All right, sure. The Patterson footage, of course, the Bigfoot footage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, every year since 1998, I've documented one to two theories trying to debunk the Patterson film. I think the Patterson film is 98% sure. Roger Patterson, Bob Gimlin saw something. They found tracks. They heard it. They smelled it. They took the film. It's been analyzed. It's not a man in a suit. The book that the individual is talking about is only one of the latest books. And unfortunately, that book was really a character assassination, which by the time you read the end of the book, you found out that it was either a costume from a carnival guy in the Carolinas or made up from a horse's hide. So even that book couldn't get its theories right, and it, of course, didn't have the suit. So the Patterson films are a remarkable piece of evidence that we really should still be studying. And, in fact, computer enhancement is showing some good things are still to be found in that film.
So you believe it's authentic?
Yeah.
West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. I'm Cindy. I'm calling from Maui, Hawaii.
Hi, Cindy. Sure.
Hi. I spent most of my adult life, I'm now 61, I spent most of my adult life in Asia, and a lot of it in Nepal and India. And in Nepal, I used to work at a Tibetan refugee camp up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And on two separate occasions over about a seven-year period that I was there, the Tibetans believe that if you see a yeti, that you die. And I saw this happen to two young men on two separate occasions, about 3 years apart. And they would come home, and they would sit down, and they would die.
Die?
They would just die.
They didn't kill themselves.
They did not kill themselves. They would. Everyone knew they were going to die. They knew they were going to die. And they went home, and they sat down, and literally sat there, and they died. They usually took about 2 days.
Probably, I don't know. What do you think, Lauren? You think they have the ability to stop their heart?
Well, I think that psychology sometimes does come into play with regard to people giving up. And but what's funny about this, of course, is that myth that you see Bigfoot or you see Yeti and you die. You do hear it in some native cultures, but also I've heard that some people have said that if you see a Yeti, that's good luck. So I'm just sorry to hear that these guys felt that way and died.
What do we hear about the intelligence of a Yeti?
Yetis are smart. They're giant apes that are very intelligent. For one thing, they keep out of the way of men most of the time and women, and so that's pretty smart.
They don't wear clothes, right? They don't.
No, they don't wear clothes. They're hair covered. They don't use fire. They don't have language. They're an upright giant ape, and because of the footprints are really much different than the Bigfoot footprints. They have a footprint that looks more like your hand,
mm-hmm.
with the toe going out to the side. They're probably more related to an orangutan than they are to a human being.
And what do you think the colony size is up there in the Himalayas? 500, 1,000, less,
I think that 350 to 500. If you look at the breeding population of the mountain gorilla right now, is right on the verge of 350, 400. It doesn't take much to keep a population alive.
We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with Lauren Coleman on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. And again, if you want that complimentary copy of the Double After Dark CD with the After Dark subscription, the newsletter, simply call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. This double CD consists of music, the bumper music, ghost stories, and some great calls to the show. And it's yours, our way of saying thank you for subscribing to the After Dark newsletter. 1-888-727-5505 or simply go online at coasttocoastam.com. How old is Cryptomundo now, Lauren Coleman?
6 months. We're at our six-month anniversary, and we're really happy.
Happy birthday. You're getting a lot of hits, aren't you?
Yeah. Last Thursday, when the Mount Hood photograph and the new information from Malaysia came out, we got 1.6 million hits that day.
Wow.
So it's a pretty popular site. It seems to be, from what people are telling me, it's the place that people are going for their cryptozoology news, and that's what I want it to be, the place that people can get information and exchange ideas and really discover and share things.
I'm all for that. Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this is Les in Colorado. Been trying to get through for years.
Well, you did it now, Les.
Yay, team. No, Lauren, I've been chasing them big hairy critters since 1962.
Cool.
I've seen nine of them in three states. trucks, miles and miles of trucks from Missouri all the way to the West Coast. It's just makes me crazy when people start stopping, debunking this and that and the other. And they've never been out there, never seen anything. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You've seen nine of these?
Yes, sir.
How about some any proof or evidence for our friend Lorne here?
No, not really, other than I'm working on a book. It's my personal experiences with them. And
any pictures?
No, never had any cameras. And
any plaster cast?
You don't find Bigfoot. Bigfoot finds you.
Well, it sounds like you've done a little bit of both.
And the biggest tracks, well, I did find one when I was up in the area looking last summer, but it just happened so fast. I had two cameras in the seat, and it was about a little after midnight, and I didn't get any pictures.
Did you take any plaster casts?
Oh, I had bunches of plaster casts over the years.
Well, that's good.
But the biggest ones I ever found, I didn't have any casts, and I think you and I were in the same area about the same time back in probably 1970, 71, along in that time period. In the
Northern
St. Louis
California?
Area.
Oh, just in St. Louis?
St. Louis? Yeah, just north of St. Louis where the Missouri
Momo?
The Mississippi run together.
Yeah, Momo?
No, it wasn't the Momo. That was the three-toed critter.
Yeah.
This was the five-toed Bigfoot. I could stand crossways in the tracks with both feet, and I couldn't touch either side.
Wow.
22.5 inches long, the biggest tracks I ever found. Both sides of the river. That's when I discovered they could swim.
Uh-huh. Yep, they certainly do. Well, I think George is right. It would be good if you get that old camera out there.
Oh, my God. It sounds like he finds these things.
Yep.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, nice to talk to you again, George. A long-time listener, second-time caller.
Well, good. Go ahead,
sir. Very good show tonight, Lauren. Lauren, you've opened my eyes to a lot of stuff, and actually I'd like to be the first to admit I am such an idiot. About 3 weeks ago, I was at home getting stuff ready for my mom to come home. Okay, she does the snowbird thing down in Florida, whatnot, stuff like that. Her house is a matter of minutes away from mine. And my nieces had come up to me and said, hey, look at this egg. And it was a large white egg. And I held it in my hands. And at first it struck me as odd because I thought it was fairly large. And I had dismissed it at the time. I said, you know, it's a goose egg. We have a lot of Canadian geese coming by only because we have a couple ponds on the property and whatnot. I had dismissed it at the time. We held it up to a light to see if, you know, it was cold at the time. We held it up to a light to see if there was anything inside it. Couldn't see anything inside it. And I said, you know, we'll take and set it down somewhere or something like that. And what had happened was my sister and my wife had taken it up to the back pasture somewhere, and they had set it down. Well, listening to your show tonight, I got to thinking, I thought, you know, that was larger than a goose egg. Uh-huh. And it was by all means close to, I guess, an ostrich egg, because my fingers spread across, and I have fairly large hands. I'm about 6 foot. If you go from my thumb to my pinky across, you're probably about 8 inches, somewhere around there. Well, it fit in the palm of my hand, but it was larger than my hand. And now thinking back on it, I'm like, you know, I don't want to go out and say that it was a Thunderbird egg, because it doesn't fit any of what you've been saying. It was, they found it in her front yard, in a hill, but nobody's been occupying the property. They found it on a hill. It wasn't in a tree or anything like that. Now, I don't know where you would take it from there.
Yeah, well, you could always take it to a local natural history, you know, museum, and have them try to identify it. Do you still have it?
Well, I don't know. And actually, it dawned on me tonight. I hadn't thought twice about it from the time I had done it. I was trying to clean up the house and get ready for mom and stuff like that. And the kids, of course, being as innocent as they are, found this egg and said, "Hey, look at this, look at this."
Yeah.
And me being the adult that I am with too many things on my head said, well, you know, dismissed it as a goose egg or something like that. I may still be able to find it. Would there be any way they could do, say, DNA tests on it if it wasn't intact all the way?
Oh, sure, sure. If there's any yolk in it or from the shell. But just they probably could identify it from the shape and color and different things like that. Or, you know, I could even help identify it. You could email me a picture of it. Put some kind of, you know, yardstick or ruler next to
it. Some type of measuring device next to it.
Yeah. That would be great.
Okay, I've also got one other thing also, Lauren, real quick, and I know that you guys are pushing time. I'm fairly rural, so I live out in the country area. I came across some tracks in my field that nobody's been able to identify, talk to the game warden about it. No idea, no clue what it could have been. Talked to the local police about it. Nobody seems to know what it was. I found it purely by accident. I've got pictures and I've got videotape of it. I wear a size 11 boot, and this thing is almost the entire size of my foot, but it only has three toes, and you can actually see the claw marks in it. And they said, well, it's not a cat, because a cat doesn't extend its claws, I guess, when it's running. And it's obvious that it was running when it had left the print, because there was some dirt behind it. And they said, you know, I dismissed it. I said, it's not a dog print. It's something other than a dog print, because I have in the video a picture of my dog print, and my dog is 100 pounds compared to my shoe, and then I go next to it and show this other print, and it's quite a bit larger. It is quite a bit wider, but like I say, it's only got three toes, and you can actually see the claw marks in front of the, if you want to call it, pads or what you.
If you send me a copy of that, I'll probably be able to identify it or match it up with either a cryptid or an animal that exists. Where are you calling from again?
Did you get that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm calling from Indiana.
Indiana, okay. All right.
Yes. Well, it's the western part of Indiana, probably, say, 25, 30 miles. Well, actually, maybe a little bit more, 40 miles from Illinois. So.
All right, but it's probably not an alligator then. I was just trying to get rid of some things in my mind. But, yeah, if you've got good photographs, good video of it, certainly get hold of me through my website, and we'll try to track it down.
I will, and I appreciate it. And let me look and see what I can do with that egg, and I'll take and get back with you on that also, because, like I say, I'm the first one to call myself an idiot. I dismissed the kids. They were purely innocent, you know, bringing this stuff up, and here I am, an adult. I should be open to this stuff, and I've got too many things on my mind, and, you know.
All right, well, get him what he needs.
Yeah, that's the rational adult mind. It gets in the way sometimes.
Wild Card Line, you're up with us. Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Dan from Cincinnati.
Hi, Dan. Go ahead, sir.
First off, I wanted to say I liked your theory there about us being the Giants.
I think we might be.
Well, I just wanted to make a quick comment about I called in a couple months ago about a Black Panther I saw here in Cincinnati.
Right.
The strange thing about it is the very air around it seemed like it was like a hallucination. So I was just wondering maybe if it's possible that these sightings could be animals that are interdimensional, maybe. And I just wanted to know what Lauren's thoughts were on that.
Hmm. All right.
I'll take my call for the air.
You got it. Go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, well, you know, in 1978, I wrote a book called Creatures of the Outer Edge, and it's been reprinted recently. And I looked at those theories flirted with them in the 70s and have gone back to what I'm much more comfortable with, which is flesh and blood animals. But I'm not disputing that there's some people feel that some of these experiences are interdimensional. But I'm a cryptozoologist that's interested in the zoological part of these stories.
All right, let's go. A couple more minutes to go, and that is it.
Great.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hey, George, this is Al. My name is Al. I'm calling from Louisiana. I'm a first-time caller, and I'm just amazed that I got through on only my second attempt to speak to you.
You're one of the lucky ones, Al.
Apparently, yeah. Well, it's nice to know I'm lucky. Lucky is a good thing. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than to be good, or so they tell me around here. The reason I'm calling is because I was fascinated with the story that Lauren was telling about the Thunderbirds and all the reports I've been hearing. We're about the same age, I think, George, and when I was between the age of 10 and 13 years old, I became fascinated with UFOs. And grew up in a very rural area where it was very dark at night, and used to spend as many nights as I could in the front yard, sleeping on the front yard, gazing at the stars, searching for UFOs, and saw a lot of really strange things, which, of course, no one believed me. But I kind of thought that if UFOs could fly overhead with lights on, they could do the same thing with lights off, and I used to really pay attention to the chance that stars would disappear while I was watching the sky. And I often saw that, and when I heard this about these Thunderbirds, it occurred to me that these birds are nocturnal and spend most of their flight time at night and can be discovered occasionally in the woods where they're resting or spending the day, which is what it sounds like most of these people found. So I think they're really spending, most of their time at night, and they're probably a very high-altitude bird. But anyways, that's what occurred to me when I heard the story.
Very difficult to find, then, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. Something that big that could remain kind of inconspicuous for such a long time, would have to be, almost invisible most of the time, but would have to be out there and be, kind of a predatory bird, too. And when the other guy said that he thought there were some large owls, the bells just kind of went off for me. Yeah.
All right, thank you. Appreciate your input.
I agree. I think that the nocturnal and the dusk and dawn sightings are much more frequent with these large birds.
Next up, west of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Chuck in Eureka, California.
Hi, Chuck. Go ahead, sir.
My best friend, who would never lie to me, and his family told me that on several occasions when he was a kid, that they used to see these large cats. This is in Marin County, California, walking on two legs, and that they were seen all the time, and that actually one time one was seen walking down the street where he lived, the main street of a little town, and walking on two legs. And I believe him, and it's always kind of giving me the chills even when I think about it. And Lauren, know anything about that?
Two-legged cats, Lauren.
Yeah, two-legged. Well, there have been a few.
It has four legs, but just walking on two.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mostly the two reports that I've investigated of two-legged cats were ones that were standing upright, leaning against the fence, attacking people. I've not heard of them walking down streets, but, I'd like to hear more about it.
Somebody in a costume, Lauren?
I don't know. What a costume.
You never know. Wildcard line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Drew from Carrier, Mississippi.
Sure, Drew. Go ahead.
I'm still shaking. I just had an incident with a crypto creature myself.
What kind of creature?
I don't know. As I told the producer, I was driving home from work down a rural, I lived out in a rural road, and a lady in front of me hit this creature, this, animal. And I stopped, right behind her, and the light shined on it. I'd say it was about 7.5 feet tall on 2 feet, hunched over a little bit, and it actually got up and walked away.
What do you think it was?
Well, I live right around the Honey Island Swamp, and I have a lot of, Choctaw Indian friends and all that. And they talk about how there's lugurus and stuff like that out here, and Honey Island Swamp Monster. I never really believed it.
And this was just something that really freaked me out. And the cops didn't believe this. I mean, the lady saw it as well. She was saying exactly what it was. I mean, it just strode. It just got up and walked away back into the woods. I mean, I was too scared to go after it or look for tracks or anything like that. Bless it, it was midnight when this happened. I mean, I don't know.
Did it look more like a Bigfoot?
It looked, to me, it looked like from the pictures seeing of them and, you know, the sketches, it looked a lot like what that would be like. Only instead of everybody has the light hair, it had like a dark black and grayish style hairstyle on it. You know, make sense at all?
Oh, yeah. They don't have light hair. They have darker hair in some of them, so that's definitely possible. The Honey Island monster is very Bigfoot-like, and so that makes some sense.
How many monster stories are out there, Lauren? I mean, every city has one, a monster.
Well, not every city, but I'd say there's hundreds of cat sightings, and probably 5 to 10 good Bigfoot sightings per week United States.
That's a lot.
That is a lot, and you hear about maybe one or two cases in the newspapers a year. So it's really a hidden phenomenon.
Do you get good cases coming into you all the time?
Pretty much. Pretty good cases. You know, the Internet's just a good form of communication, but I do hear from investigators, researchers, as well as the occasional newspaper article.
All right, Lauren. Thanks for being on the program.
Sure.
Wonderful information, my friend.
Great. It's good to be here, George.
Lauren Coleman, cryptozoologist. Get up to cryptomundo.com and take a look at some of the remarkable things that he has posted. And people send him things, too. Pictures, stationary pictures of what could be Bigfoot near Mount Hood. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.